Greetings and thank you for tuning in for our text in Isaiah chapter 42, verses 1 through 9. I'm Reed Lessing, and thank you for joining us from the campus of Concordia Seminary. This is traditionally called Isaiah's first servant song, verses 1 through 4, that is. Each of the four servant songs has an epilogue, and this is no different. So verses 5 through 9 would be considered the epilogue to the first servant song. For example, if we would look at the second servant song in chapter 49, 1 through 6, its epilogue would be 7 through 13. In like manner, chapter 50, 4 through 9, the third servant song has an epilogue in verses 9 and 10. In the fourth servant song, in 52:13 through 53:12, has as its epilogue, or the implications of that, would be all of chapter 54. Let's get our context here. As we look at chapter 42, verse 1, it begins with this particle of immediacy, hein, which is equivalent to hene. And if we would look at chapter 41, verse 29, it also begins with hein. 41:29 also has ruach, which is prominent, obviously, in 42, verse 1, where Yahweh says, I am placing ruki alav, I'm placing my spirit upon him. These connecting links between 41:29 and 42:1 are worth exploring a little bit further. 41 verses 25 through 29 would be the last of three courtroom cases that Isaiah unfolds for us as Yahweh, through his prophet Isaiah, calls Babylonian deities, chiefly Marduk and Nebo, who come in 46:1, to account. And so 41:29 says, behold, all of them aven iniquity, Ephes, nothing their works, ruach, we'd probably not translate ruach here as spirit, but maybe breath or wind, vatohu, and formless, their molten images. So that's the summary of this last courtroom scene in chapter 41. And this is pivotal for a correct interpretation as well as application of this first servant song. With that in mind, then, behold my servant, Hain Avdi. So who's the servant? The servant is a plurality initially. We get that simply by looking at the trailer in 42. Verse 9, just really the last word where Yahweh says, et kem, you, and that would be you, second person masculine, plural. So the servant here is a plurality. I am making this known to you, as we would understand the last few words in 42, verse 9. The first time Eved, servant, appears in the Isaiah 40 to 55 program is in 41 verse 8. So take a look at that. Ve'ata Yisrael Avdi. So Israel is the servant. Now, and now you, Israel, my servant. We cannot go too quickly to Jesus here. As we begin to interpret and understand this first servant song. Certainly in Matthew chapter 12, which is Matthew's longest quotation from the Old Testament in his gospel, Matthew applies this song to Jesus, but only typologically, not in a rectilinear way. That is to say, just as Matthew applies Hosea 11 verse 1 in a typological way, in Matthew 2, verse 15. So likewise in Matthew 12, he applies this song initially to Israel. He understands it, but then fulfilled in Christ. Okay, so behold my servant. So Yahweh is talking about his servant nation Israel. I am upholding him, my chosen one, Bechori. This adjective comports nicely with the verb bakar, which also comes in 41 verse 8. My chosen one, my life delights in my chosen one. We'll take this Natani, excuse me, Natati, this call perfect first common singer from Natan is a so-called instantaneous perfect. So I am placing my ruach, my spirit upon him, and here's the key word. It's repeated three times in this first servant song, mishpat. The understanding of mishpat now is all important. Justice doesn't get it, although it's not completely wrong. If we go back to the context that we established and the link between the first servant song and 41:29, then we understand that the mishpat here is the verdict. The verdict of what? Israel, the nation, is to announce Lagoim to the nations, the verdict. The verdict is what? Idolatry is a compulsion and addiction that promises everything that delivers nothing. The idols are Ephes, going back to 41:29. They're nothing. They're ruach. They're wind. They're tohu. They're agents of formlessness. Tohu, of course, as every beginning Hebrew student remembers, first comes in Genesis 1 verse 2, where the ruach of Elohim, the Spirit of God, was hovering over the face of the deep, because everything was tohu vabohu. Formless and void. So this idea that idols take us back to pre-creational formlessness, where there's only darkness. Idols take us back to a world before Genesis 1 verse 3, where Yahweh first speaks, Yehi Or, let there be light. This is the verdict of all idolatries. And we need to understand that for most Christians, idols aren't evil in and of themselves. That is to say, my job, my country, my children, my church, my synod, my wife, these aren't evil in and of themselves. But idolatry is to take what is good make them ultimate. It's to take the penultimate and make them supreme. It's to take objects of affection and begin to make them objects of adoration. We're all guilty of idolatry. And Israel now, the nation is to announce the verdict, see, to the nations. Mishpat Lagoim Yotzi. That's the point. That's the mission. Israel from Genesis 12 on has been a missional people where in you, Yahweh tells Avram, all the families of the earth will be blessed. So in this current mission, while the people are in Babylon, which is Babalu, is actually the Akkadian, means gate of the gods. I mean, Babylon was rampant with idolatry, at least 2,000 different deities that we're aware of. So Israel is to announce to the nations the verdict that idolatry kills and steals and destroys. Now, how is Israel to go about this? In a fascinating way, the negative particle lo comes seven times in the next three verses. So Israel is to be in mission not as the rest of the nations. Example A would be Babylon. Babylon bruised reeds and quenched out wicks. So Israel is to fight oppression not with more oppression, but with humility, understanding that when they're weak, they're strong. So not lo yitzak, not will he, that is the nation, cry out, and it will not lift up and hear colo is actually backward gapped. That is to say, the last word in 42.2 also is to be understood in the first colon. Lo yisa understood colo. He will not lift up his voice. So you don't meet the idolatry of the nations with brute power and force. And he will not make known a hifil of Shema in the street his voice. No, again, it's through humility and meekness that we are to meet and Israel is to meet idolatry. So a bruised reed, kana ratzutz, call passive participle of ratzatz, a bruised reed he will not break, and a wick from flax, literally, pishteh, a wick from flax that is smoldering, he will not quench. Now this idea of the wick that is made from the flax and the reed, these are symbols of other nations in the book of Isaiah. So in 36:6, Egypt is called a Kana, and in 43:17, Egypt is called this wick made from flax that is dim. As Israel goes about announcing the verdict against idolatry, the nation confronts other nations like Egypt, again, you don't plow over the idolaters. So a bruised reed he will not break, a smoldering wick he will not snuff out. These are the nations caught up in idolatry. They get mercy instead of justice. And it goes on, le'emet, to completion, to faithfulness. He will bring forth mishpat, the verdict. The job will be completed. Not by the nation of Israel. No, Israel reduced to one, Jesus the Christ, is the one who finally finishes this. Tetelestai, it is finished. John 19, verse 30. And Paul reminds us in Philippians 1:6 that he who began a good work will bring it to completion. So we're going to see that the nation failed in this task. And why is that? If we would just go on down to 42:19, we will see that who is blind but my servant and deaf like my messenger I am sending. The point is tremendously huge. The servant is blind and deaf. And it's the same servant initially in chapter 42. If you're blind and deaf in the book of Isaiah, you only get that way through idolatry. Programmatic is Isaiah's call in chapter 6, 9, and 10, where the prophet confirms the people in their idolatry. He makes them blind and deaf and unfeeling. So blindness and deafness come through idolatry in the book of Isaiah. Main point, huge point. So how can the blind lead the blind? How can the deaf lead the deaf? If the nations are caught up in idolatry, how can Israel help them when Israel himself is caught up in idolatry? Thank God there's a second servant named Jesus. Moving on to verse 4. He will not extinguish and he will not bruise until he sets forth in the earth the verdict. So here's a couple more lows. As I said, there are seven. and his Torah to the islands, they will hope. So this last word kind of deambiguates, if I can use that word, mishpat. Mishpat isn't justice as much as it is the Torah, the revelation of Yahweh concerning idolatry. Well, we go on then. What is going to be the foundation? Who was behind the servant nation initially, hoping that the servant nation will succeed? It's no one less than Yahweh. So here's the trailer, the epilogue, to explain a little bit more what is going on in 1 through 4. So Ko Amar Yahweh, the God, so Ko Amar Ha'el Yahweh, thus says the God Yahweh. And then we have these series of participles indicating that Yahweh's present act of creation is no less with the people than when he first created the world. A nice reminder of this is in 43:19, "Behold, I'm doing a new thing." So Yahweh's new thing, his ability to recreate, is being highlighted here by use of these participles. So the one creating the heavens and stretching them out, bara, of course, is the creational verb. Second word in the Bible, bereshit bara. Only Yahweh is the subject of bara, and there is no accusative of substance. He creates ex nihilo. So undergirding the nation is the creator of the heavens and the one hammering roka, the earth, and what goes forth from it, its produce. Giving, here's the third participle, a breath to people, to the nation upon it, and the ruach, and a wind to the ones walking in her, literally, ba, going back to the feminine singular noun ha'aretz. So it's interesting, ruach in 41:19 is a word for idols. Ruki in 42:1 is the Holy Spirit. Ruach here would simply be breath that Yahweh gives to those walking upon the earth. I am Yahweh, the one calling you. I'll take that as an instantaneous perfect. In righteousness, Zedek is the execution of Zedek and Zedekah would be Yahweh's way of ordering the world according to his will and ways. So the nation is called in righteousness, and in this sense, in order to enact Yahweh's right verdict concerning the gods of the nations. And I am seizing by means of your right hand, or I'm just seizing, I'm sorry, yada, yad, I'm seizing your hand. I am forming or guarding you. I'm placing you. Again, the you here, all of this is going back to the Eved. So Yahweh's behind the ministry of the servant nation. And he's made them what? To be a covenant people, a light for the nations. And you can't be a light for the nations if you're living in the darkness of idolatry. That's the main point that we have spelled out for us, as I said, later in 42:19. Well, initially, see, the servant nation is to open the eyes that are blind. Again, the great irony is, how can the blind lead the blind? So the substitute servant actually is called in 49, 1 through 6. And in verse 6 in chapter 49, his ministry is to restore the tribes of Israel as well as be a light to the nations to the end of the earth. This is Jesus, most definitely in 49, 1 through 6. I would take the last three servant songs in 49, 50, and 53 to be rectilinear direct prophecies of Jesus. There's no one in Israel. There's no one in the book of Isaiah that fulfills, even comes close to being the substitute servant. So the servant in 42 needs the servant to impart to Pauline terms. Israel is the servant kata sarx, according to the flesh. Jesus is the spirit kata pneuma. And at his baptism, we celebrate that he is the replacement, the substitute servant. He does what Israel cannot do. He does what we cannot do. He can open the eyes of the blind. Again, it's in Isaiah that means idolaters. To bring forth a hifilim construct from Yetzad, to bring forth a prisoner from a prison and from a prison house, those dwelling in darkness. Verse 8, I am Yahweh, that is my name. My glory to another I will not give. That's a big idea. Especially as we go to chapter 52:13, where Jesus, no doubt in a rectilinear way, Jesus is the substitute servant here. And let's just take a look at that as we see in chapter 52, verse 13, Hein yaskil avdi yarum venesa vegava me'od. Behold, my servant will prosper, act wisely. Rum and Nesah, you see those two verbs? Only Yahweh is the subject of Rum and Nesah in the book of Isaiah. The verses are in 6:1, 33:10, and 57:15. Why is this important? Yahweh says, I won't give my glory to another. No one is on the same level as Yahweh. He's Kadosh, 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 holy, 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 in 6 verse 3. However, that's not what is going on in 52:13. Yahweh does give his glory to another, and it's the servant who is high and lifted up like only Yahweh is. The New Testament gives us categories for this. The Hebrew writer says in 1:3, the Son is the radiance of God's glory, the exact representation of his being. John 10, verse 30, I and the Father are one. Colossians 2:6, in him the fullness of the deity dwells in bodily form. Thomas in John 20, my Lord and my God. I understand this is somewhat tangential. But Yahweh will not give his glory to another idol, but he will give his glory to another, and that would be the substitute servant who in the fullness of time has a name that is above every name, and that's Jesus. Or am I praise to idols? You can see the end of verse 8. Well, again, this helps us understand that really the Pesalim, the idols, we haven't dropped that subject that was so rampant throughout the end of chapter 41. Verse 9, the former things, behold, they have happened. Now, what are the Rishonot? Maybe creation, that's certainly the context here. And the new things I am declaring. Well, the new things in this section of Isaiah would be Yahweh stirring from the east Cyrus. We have that alluded to in 41 verse 2 when Cyrus is finally named in 44:28 and 45:1. But it's also the substitute servant. So then the new things of Cyrus and the servant, Yahweh Ani Magid, Hifil of Nagad, I am declaring. We'll take this as a call, imperfect, third feminine plural from Tzamach, before they spread out. I am making it, them. There's something missing there, but it's poetry. Ashmiach et kem. I am making this known to you. And again, that indicates we're talking about a plurality of servants here initially. A very helpful book that I have found in dealing with idolatry in a biblical and a pastoral way would be a book by Tim Keller, K-E-L-L-E-R. You can get it at any Christian bookstore. And it's called Counterfeit Deities, Everything You Ever Want to Know About Money, Sex, and Power. Keller helps us apply texts like this regarding idolatry in ways that are beyond just superficial, but in ways that the parishioners understand and can apply. So I would commend that book to you, not only for this section of Isaiah 40 through 48, but really much of the Bible. It really has as its root the confrontation of Yahweh and the idols of our hearts. So thank you very much for tuning in. Blessings to you as you prepare this wonderful text from Yeshayahu ben Amoz, Isaiah the son of Amoz.